Good morning, and welcome to another in our series of mini shiurim on the Book of Ezra. We're learning in the merit of the IDF, Israel's emergency services, the hostages, and the injured. And we are in the middle of the census of the Jews who came back with Zerubbabel to Israel. We're in chapter 2, sentence 36. And we're up to the Kohanim and Levium. And the highlight of this section of the Kohanim and Levium, which runs from sentence 36 to sentence 42, is actually what's not here, as opposed to what is here. So it tells us about the Kohanim, and it lists families, Yedaya of Yeshua's household, and so on. And these are important names. These are families of Kohanim who lead shifts in the second base Hamikdash. But we get to the Levium in sentence 40, and it says, HaLevium, B'nei Yeshua v'Kadmiel, Livnei Hodavia, Shivim ve'arba'ah, 74. There are 74 Levium who have come back out of 42,360 or 630 Jews. There are 74 Levium. Now, not necessarily 74. Rashi and the Malbim believe that sentences 41 and 42 also are talking about Levium. Sentence 41 talks about Meshoarim, those who sing. Sentence 42 talks about Shoarim, people who open the gates. So those are Levium also. So if we were to take sentences 41 and 42 and include them, that would give us 341. That's a pretty small number still. Why are there so few Levium? So a conventional explanation is because there's not much cachet in being a Levi, meaning you're not receiving the Truma. You're not somebody of the highest standing like a Kohen. You're a Levi. You do work in the Beis HaMikdash, but it's not the same. And that's kind of a standard explanation. But Professor Mordechai Zer Kavod, in the Dat Mikra edition, commenting on chapter 2, sentence 40, offers a novel approach. He refers us to Yechezkel chapter 44, sentences 9 to 14, where there is criticism specifically for the families of Levi who had served Avodah Zarah, who had served idolatry. And there he says, specifically, okay, Nasasi Yadi Alehem, Nu'um Hashem Elokim, V'nasi'u Avonam. I have raised my hand against them, Hashem says. They will bear their sins. V'lo Yigshu'e Lailachahein Li. They will not come to serve me. V'lageshas Alkol Kodashai El Kochea Kodashim. For them to come to my holy things, for them to come to the Holy of Holies. V'nasi'u Kalimasam V'so'avosam Asher Asu. They shall bear their shame. They shall bear the burden of that which they have done. I'll make them the guardians of the house for all of the avodah, for all of the service, but they're not going to get to serve anymore. So it's possible then that they don't come back because they take Yechezkel's message seriously. Like, we're done. So we're not coming back. Maybe the weakness in that answer is that the Kohanim come back in solid numbers. And this vision is not specifically to Levites, to Levium. It's talking about Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, which includes the Kohanim. So this is unclear. We're going to have to come back to this point in chapter 8, sentence 15. That's where we're going to talk more about the disappearing Levium. We move on now to the next section of the census, which is sentences 43 to 63. And this is for the people who have problematic lineage. When we think about the challenges facing the Jews returning for the second Beis HaMikdash, one of the major problems, honestly, very reminiscent of an issue encountered in the 20th and 21st century for us as well, one of the major problems for the returning nation is how do you deal with Jews whose identity has been marred during the exile? Kohanim, who have lost their documents that prove that they're Kohanim, for example. Products of inappropriate relationships. Now what is going to happen? So here we confront that concern head on, identifying those returnees whose lineage is problematic. Interesting to note, We've talked about certain parallels between the return for the second Beis HaMikdash and the Jews who came from Egypt into Israel, like receiving wealth from their neighbors. So people with problematic lineage are another common theme. When the Jews got out of Egypt, they had the Erev Rav. With them, Egyptians who came and mixed in, Rashi says that they joined Judaism, and Moshe gets blamed for them. The golden calf may be blamed on them. We have the story of Shlomis Bas Divri and her son, who was the son of an Egyptian man. Note that we also have this idea in the future Geula, the time of the future redemption, where the Gemara in Kiddushin talks about how in the time of Mashiach, Eliyahu was going to come and resolve the standing of the Mamzerim. So who are the people of problematic lineage here? So the classic Mishnah, the beginning of the fourth chapter in Kiddushin, it's Samach Tes Amud Aleph, which tells us that there are 10 groups, each of which is here in this list. So the first three groups are the Kohanim, Leviim, and Yisraelim, who we enumerated pretty explicitly. Then you have Chalalim. Chalalim refers to Kohanim who, because of a sin of lineage, are not able to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. So that is a reference to those who are in sentences 61 to 63 in this chapter. Some of them are listed in sentence 62 as those who are seeking the scroll of their lineage and it can't be found, and therefore they are exiled from the kahuna. They're not able to serve properly as kohanim. So those are the chalalim. They're kohanim. They're not allowed to eat from karbanos. They're allowed to eat truma. That sentence is 61 to 63. You also had in this return Gerim, people who converted to Judaism, as well as Meshuchwarim, people who have been Avadim, who have been slaves, but were then freed. They're not actually referenced in chapter 2. They get referenced in chapter 6, sentence 21. That's where we find them identified. And then you also, the pasuk there says, Kol hanivdal mitum'as goyei ha'aretz aleihem, those who had separated from the impurity of the idolatry of the land and come to the Jews, Lidrosh Lashem Elokei Yisrael, to seek Hashem, God of Israel. So that's a reference to people who are Gerim, who convert to Judaism, and Avadim, slaves, who had been freed and had become Jews. And then also Mamzerim. Mamzerim are also not explicitly on the list in chapter 2. However, in the parallel list in Nehemiah chapter 7, sentence 61, we find that. We find the Mamzerim as explained in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Ayin. Then there are the Nesinim, and we're going to come back to those, and they are enumerated back in our chapter 2, sentences 43 to 54. We'll come back to who they are. And then finally, Shtuki and Asufi. Shtuki and Asufi are people of problematic lineage. They are referenced in Nehemiah chapter 7, sentence 61. Shtuki is somebody who, as the Gemara likes to say, asks their mother who their father is, and the mother says, shh, don't talk. Asufi is a child who is found in the market, and we don't know who the parents are, not the father, not the mother. So those are the 10 groups, and as I said, when we talked about the presence of these lists of names, this is a reason for the lists of names, separate from all the other points about making it look like there are a lot of returnees or a small number of returnees or emphasizing the human role or talking about the founders or the poetry. All of those are true. But another element here is that it enables us to track who is able to marry whom. And that's something that actually the Gemara in Kiddushin, Samach Tes Amud Beis, talks about as a major task of Ezra, that Ezra devotes a lot of his energy to this cause, to the point where we said that one reason that's given for why Ezra did not return immediately to Israel was because he was learning from Baruch ben Neriah, student of Yirmiyahu. Another reason that the Gemara offers in Kiddushin Samach Tes Amud Beis is that it's because he was working on cleaning up all of the lineage issues before he came to the land. That's consistent with the fact that we will see Ezra as well as Nehemiah act against mixed marriages. That's clearly part of their agenda. Okay, Last point. Sentences 43 to 54 talk about the Nisinim. What are Nisinim? So we talked about them a little bit, actually, when we learned Yehoshua, with the story of the Givonim, because they are associated. Nisinim, in this census, are merged with the descendants of the servants of Shlomo HaMelech, of King Solomon. We're going to have to discuss those separately, probably in the next recording. But the Nisinim, we are told, according to chapter 8, sentence 20 in Ezra, are people David established as servants of the Levium. And the term that's used is Natan. He placed them. So that makes them Netinim, the ones who were placed. But that, Ezra chapter 8, sentence 20, does not explain how they ended up in this role. That's not at all clear. I'm just flipping to that sentence, so I can read it to you. Chapter 8, sentence 20 is going to say, Umin ha-Nesinim, and from the Nesinim, Shanasan David v'hasarim la'avodas halviyim, from the Nesinim, who David and the officers, the nobles, placed to serve the Levium, and then it tells us how many there were. But how did they come to be servants for Levi? So we have a record of people who were set aside as servants of Levi in their work on behalf of the Mishkan and then Beis HaMikdash. In Bamidbar, chapter 31, sentence 30, we're told explicitly that they are given after the war with Midian. The text uses the word, hang on, V'nasata osam la'leviyim, you shall give them to the Leviyim, guardians of the preserve of Hashem. So already there we have this idea that there are people who are placed into this role of serving the Mishkan. In Yoshua chapter 9, we encountered the Givonim. The Givonim are people who were Canaanites. They're from the tribe of the Chivi. And they came to Yehoshua claiming to be from a distant land and saying they wanted to make a treaty. They thought Yehoshua would not make a treaty with them if he knew they were locals. So they figured, let's get him into a treaty, and then he's going to discover we're neighbors. So, and that's exactly what happened. He made the treaty with them, and then he discovered that they were neighbors. And he was so angry at having been defrauded. But on the other hand, they didn't want to break their word that they said that they would not harm them. So they said, okay, so from now on, yes, we're going to take care of you, but you're going to have to work on behalf of the Mishkan. And they were placed, that same word, Nasan, they were placed in the role of serving the Mishkan. So this is who they are from the time of Yehoshua. You had some people from the war with Midian, then you have some from these Givonim here in Yehoshua. And Ezra chapter 8, sentence 20 says that David reasserted this role for them. Nisinim, the ones who were assigned this role. There's more to say about the word Nisinim, but I think I'm gonna stop there for that point. So these people are named here in our section, sentences 43 to 54. Professor Zer Kavod in the Da Mikra notes that many of the names could be based on their work in the Mishkan. So there are names associated with drawing water, names associated with setting up the rings on the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash, associated with making wicks or threads for the menorah, chopping wood. And the last question that I want to leave you with here is the question of, why did the Nisinim come back? Why did they return? You're coming back to a role of serving in the Beis HaMikdash. It's very hard to say they're forced to come serve. That doesn't seem to fit, especially because there will be others on the list who will be identified as avadim, as servants. So I don't think that works. We will see. We're going to talk about Avdei Shlomo, King Solomon's servants, and there is a sense that they have a degree of status, social status, because of what they serve. They serve the king. So maybe that applied to those who served the Beis HaMikdash. Last possibility is maybe they came back because they just genuinely believed. They believed in the righteousness of the cause. They believed in the Beis HaMikdash. They believed in its holiness, and therefore they came back to have that role.